Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, January 18, 2009. It is now about 8:02 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. We invite you to call during our live broadcast, 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Or email us anytime at comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you are listening to a live broadcast, to a rebroadcast, you may also phone in your comments to 918-919-0101. Folks, I encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. Lastly, I would like also to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. I know this is a very difficult evening. I think Pittsburgh is playing the Ravens right now, and I think Pittsburgh is winning, and I'm sure everyone's glued by the TV set watching the AFC Championship game, but the show must go on. So I have peeled my way away from the TV set, not that I watch that much football, to conduct this broadcast this evening. It is a special broadcast because this evening we have with us, we will have with us in a couple of minutes, a woman who has spent time as a peace activist and just came back from the Gaza Strip. Now, we've heard a lot about the Gaza Strip and who's right, who's wrong, who's doing what to whom. There is a lot of misinformation, folks, about this, and historically, unfortunately, we do not look at this from the right perspective. The way I look at it is very different than the way we see it on television. Now, I don't deny anyone the right to live anywhere. I do deny governments taking land from people and then displacing other people. And I don't care who they are, and I don't care what their religious persuasion is, it's not right. And this is what we have now. And of course, what we do is we continue to go back on biblical scriptures and saying, well, this is the way God wanted to be, so this is why we're here, and to prove it, we will kill everyone who disagrees with us. And I disagree with that very much. I think we have a situation in Gaza that simply will not go away. It will never go away unless some people come to the realization that people make mistakes, governments make mistakes, and the day that governments admit to making mistakes is the day that we'll start having some peace in the world. But unfortunately, that will not happen. Now, I think our guest is on the line now. Let's bring her in.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Nancy.
Just a second. Hi, Joe. I just had to turn off my computer because your live voice is delayed about 3 seconds, and it was confusing me.
That is correct. I know. I heard it on the air. I said, geez, I'm hearing myself say this all over again. I thought I was going crazy. Well, folks, on the line with us, and as our guest this evening, we are privileged to have Nancy Humphrey, and she's a member of the Interfaith Peace Builders, who has recently returned from the a land called the Gaza Strip, and we're going to learn a little bit more about that. She'll give us a little bit about a historical perspective of the area, as well as her opinion as what is really transpiring in that area. So, Nancy, welcome to our show. Welcome to Liberty Talk Radio.
Thank you, Joe. It's great to have this opportunity.
Thank you. And, Nancy, if you could speak up just a little bit, it would be helpful for our listeners.
Okay, I will try. I will do my best.
Okay, you sound great now. Okay.
I want to make a correction, Joe. I was in Palestine, Israel area. I was mainly in the occupied territories of the West Bank. I stood at the wall or the gate of Gaza. Of course, I couldn't get into it. So most of my trip was involved with the occupied territories of the West Bank.
Oh, I see. Okay, very good. Well, we're going to talk all about that. First, just for the information for our listeners, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you decided to vacation, you know, in that area?
Well, first of all, I'm fortunate to be a retired teacher. I was a school counselor for the last 13 years, and I've always had a passion for peace. And in my retirement years, I've enjoyed traveling, and my travels very often involve some kind of mission work. In the past, I have built churches, helped to build churches and homes in Mexico and Bolivia and South Africa. But this most recent trip was a peace delegation, and I went with a group called Interfaith Peace Builders. This is a group that focuses just on the Israel-Palestine area, that conflict, and they send 4 delegations each year to visit the area, to meet people, and see firsthand what it's like to live under an occupation. And then our goal is to come back and tell other people about who we met and what we saw and give them a better understanding of what's happening over there. So I'm so glad to have this opportunity tonight to do that.
Well, that's great, Nancy. We appreciate your being on the air with us because our reach is worldwide. We literally get correspondence from Chinese nationals. We have one of my favorite listeners is from Chile, and good old Tom from Chile, and he writes to me on occasion. So this is interesting because this is being broadcasted from Tulsa, Oklahoma. We do have listeners from Tulsa, Oklahoma, because people know us and they know the station is available. But we also get calls and inquiries and comments from all over the world. So hopefully this will help you in your outreach. And I really, truly hope that it does do so. It does add to your mission. Now, first, why don't you tell us exactly where were you and why you decided to go where you did go?
Okay. We started out, our group was from across the United States, and 4 of us were from Great Britain. We had an orientation in Washington, D.C., and flew from Washington, D.C. to London, and London to Tel Aviv. And from there, we met our tour guide and bus driver, and immediately went to Jerusalem. That was our kind of our home base.
Okay.
We stayed in a beautiful hotel in Jerusalem on the top of the Mount of Olives. It was called the Seven Arches Hotel, and we could look out our picture window and see the old city of Jerusalem, which has the big wall that surrounds it, and
yes,
the famous Golden Dome was shining.
Right.
It was quite magnificent. But our tour guide knew that we wanted to see what I call kind of the roads less traveled. So so while we were surrounded by hundreds and thousands of tour buses of mainly people that were coming to see the holy sites, coming to walk in the steps of Jesus, we saw the holy sites, but we saw beyond the holy sites the people that live in the midst of the occupation. We took roads that those typical Holy Land tours didn't take. We went south as far as Hebron. We were at the border of Gaza, and we visited Sderot, which is the small town that's closest to Gaza, the one that has received all those rocket fire. And, of course, we're meeting people all along the way. Then we went as far north as Jenin, and there is a refugee camp there, and that's where we learned a lot about the olive harvest, met farmers there, and got to see how they harvested the crop, and they have a new co-op there that helps the farmers to get a fair price for their crop and produces the most wonderful olive oil, which I'm selling as I go along on my tours. Kind of in between there is Ramallah. We visited there. And I also spent the last week in Bethlehem, which was a very interesting experience. The delegation was 2 weeks, and I stayed a third week on my own in Bethlehem.
All right, let me ask this. You said that you were able to go to the walls of, or to the border of Gaza, but you were unable to enter Gaza. Now, why were you unable to enter? Was that the Palestinians refusing to allow you to entry, or was that the Israelis not allowing you to enter?
Okay, good question. Well, it was certainly the Israelis. They have put up a wall that surrounds Gaza, and no one could come in or out. When we got there, we met some journalists that had been kind of camping out there for 2 or 3 days. They were from Great Britain, hoping to get in. There was also this huge balloon that kind of looked like a blimp that floats over Gaza, I guess kind of keeping a watch on the place.
Now, stop right there. I'm filled with questions now. This blimp or balloon or whatever it is, spy balloon or surveillance balloon or whatever it was, or blimp, was that a Palestinian or an Israeli Palestinian blimp?
It was Israeli.
Okay.
I'm sure it was Israeli, yes. They're keeping an eye on the 1.5 million people that are walled in, are caged in there in Gaza.
Now, please explain to our listeners, is Gaza a nation in and of itself? Is a Palestinian territory? Is it a real estate? What is the Gaza Strip?
Well, it's a section of the region it borders the Mediterranean Sea and Egypt. It's a long strip of land that borders Israel, Egypt, and the Mediterranean.
It's very, very small, isn't it? It's like 16 miles long or something like that. Isn't it very small?
I understand it's about 140 square miles.
Okay.
Does that sound about right?
That's small. Okay.
And that, together with the West Bank section, are the occupied territories of Palestine. Israel took control after the Six-Day War in 1967. Before that, Gaza was occupied by Egypt, and the West Bank belonged to Jordan.
Okay. All right.
And in the 1967 war, Israel took over all of that area so that they now occupy the West Bank, Gaza, an area called the Golden Heights, and part of Lebanon were also a part of that.
All right. So
the completion of that war.
The Gaza Strip and the West Bank were not initially part of the territory that Britain surrendered to Israel as to be Israel.
Right.
Okay.
It does go back way back. You're right. It goes back to the Britain in 1970. Are you referring to the Balfour Declaration?
No, I'm talking about 1948 when they first abdicated their rights to the region. The British wanted out, and they said, "Fine, we'll make this an Israeli settlement." Because of the sort of reparations because of World War II and the
history goes back further than that during World War I. Is actually, I just heard that on a YouTube little blurb.
Yeah.
George Galloway, who's the House of Commons right now in England, on January 15th, this is his quote, he said, "We are the authors of this tragedy. Under the Balfour Declaration of 1917, on behalf of a first people, the British, we made a promise to the second people, the Jews, the land of a third people, the Palestinians." And that was in the Balfour Declaration
of
1917,
right.
Before World War I was over.
But officially they surrendered the land to the Zionists, I guess. Not so much to the Israelis, but to the Zionists. And then they left town and they said, "Good luck, folks." Basically, that's the way it worked out, right?
They could not get control of the area, and they just turned it over to the United Nations after World War II.
All right. Now, since
they made a partition plan of 1947.
Well, if the Gaza Strip really is a land that's a portion for the Palestinians, why are what does the Israelis have to do with building a wall around it and surveilling it if it's not their territory?
Well, that's a good question, Joe. After the war of 1967, the Jewish started building settlements, Jewish-only settlements, in the areas of the occupied Palestine, which is the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip. And these were illegal settlements. They just started dotting the territory. The United Nations, the Geneva Convention, and all kinds of international laws said, "Stop, this is illegal, you can't do this." But they have continued to build these settlements, and then they have to build a wall to protect the settlements that have come up in the midst of an Arab or a Palestinian neighborhood.
Right. Now, this wall, the walls that they built, were within the West Bank.
Yes.
Because the settlements were in the West Bank, so they were sort of annexing more land, if you will, by virtue of having these settlements there, putting a wall there. Okay. Well, I guess they were able to do that because they're the military superpower of the area, and there's no one that's going to challenge them.
That's right. They supposedly pulled out of the area in 2005.
Yeah.
And that's true. They pulled their soldiers and settlers out. There were some settlements in Gaza, and they pulled all the settlers out and all of the soldiers, but they continued to have control over those borders where they had control over who would come and who can go. They had control over land and air and water. And I guess things tightened up really. They started the siege after that election where the Palestinian people voted Hamas in, and then they put the siege on. So that limits the water, the food, the medicine, the electricity. So the people were really suffering from just lack of basic things that you need to live.
So what they're doing to Palestinians in the Gaza Strip is what was done to them during Nazi Germany.
It looks
with the Jewish ghettos.
Like that.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, there are different reasons, but it just seems that way,
how it looks like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And also, it looks very much like apartheid in South Africa, the way they're trying to separate the Palestinian people and not have to even see them with this wall. It's called a separation wall of security. And I think most people, when they hear wall, they think of the Berlin Wall, and I would like to listeners to realize this wall is twice as tall as the Berlin Wall. It's 25 to 30 feet high in the rural areas.
Yeah.
It's made out of cement. In the rural areas, it's more wire and electric fence and ditches. But it's scheduled to be 400 miles long, surrounding the West Bank, if it gets completed.
Okay. Now, all right. What did you learn when you were there? What was your mission, basically? I know your mission is to spread the word of peace and to... I guess you're sort of like a journalist. Not a journalist, but a... I guess like a journalist. You go in, you learn something, and you come out and you talk or write about it, right? So, all right. So, what did you expect when you got there, and what were some of the surprises?
Well, it's shocking to see the wall, to actually stand there and put your hand on it and hold it and look at the expanse of it. It's shocking to see the discrimination against people that are, supposedly living under the same government. In Jerusalem, for example, I was so surprised. There's an east and a west Jerusalem, and the east is the Palestinian neighborhoods, and the west is the Jewish neighborhoods. And under the same government, it's just night and day, the difference in the neighborhoods. In the Jewish neighborhoods, they've got nice, neat houses, beautiful streets, nice sidewalks. There's parks. They've got a water system that gives them all the water they need, and a garbage and sanitation system that keeps the neighborhood looking great. And when you cross over into, it's the same city, but it's a Palestinian neighborhood. The streets are rickety. There's no sidewalks. The water, all of these houses have tanks on the top of their roof, and you're just going, what's up with this? The people in the Palestinian neighborhoods have to collect and save water because they only get water a certain portion of the day or week. They're limited to the amount of water they get. It doesn't seem to be any sanitation service. If so, I think the United Nations comes along sometimes and helps them with sanitation. But it's just amazing that they can discriminate against people like that within the same.
So basically, you're saying the city of Jerusalem is like any other city,
yes.
And the Palestinians and there's Palestinian areas, subdivisions, if you will, or developments, and then there's Jewish developments and others, and the Jewish developments are doing fine, and the rest are just barely subsisting.
And keep in mind all of the Jewish settlements the Jewish settlements are built illegally in the occupied territories, and as the settlements are being built illegally, Palestinian homes are being bulldozed. They can't get a permit to build on their own land, and when they try to go ahead and build, their homes get bulldozed. There's been like 4,000 homes, Arab or Palestinian homes, that have been bulldozed.
You know, I hear what you're saying, but to me, it just doesn't make much sense at all. I mean, where's the outrage? Let's take this thing step by step before we jump all over the place. So
let me tell you some of the other things that
please.
I saw. As you know, we're seeing this wall and these barriers, and as we meet people along the way, they're telling us stories that, you know, the wall separates me from my farmland. I can't get to my olive trees to harvest my olives. The wall or the separation barrier blocks me from getting to school or to my place of work. I know there's people in Bethlehem that used to be able to go to Jerusalem to work, and there's all kinds of blockades, security checks that they have to go through, and it just makes life very difficult. So I saw a lot of suffering, but I also saw along the way hope because at every turn we met activists that were doing things to promote a peaceful solution to this problem.
Well, how there's hope? I mean, that's strange. I would never imagine that there would be any hope in the area at all.
Well, I guess it's just people that don't want to give up. And these are people that are both Israeli and Palestinian. One man we met is a Jew. His name is Jeff Halper. I think he was born in Minnesota, but I think he has like dual citizenship in Israel now. He has started a what's called the Israeli Committee Against Home Demolition, and he's just taken it as his mission to try to stop the home demolitions. But if he can't stop them, then he has crews that work to rebuild homes that have been demolished.
I see. And these homes belong to the Palestinians, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
They don't. It's quite frightening. There's lots of people that are just kind of living in fear that their house might be next. The bulldozer just comes one day and takes a house.
Now, what is the attitude of the Arab population toward the United States, because the United States provides Israel with so much support?
You know, that's surprising. They were very warm and friendly people. The hospitality they offered us continued to humble me. It seemed like every time we paused, someone was offering us a cup of tea or some refreshments. And as we got into our journey, we all got to spend the night with families. Several of us would go to different families, and we would spend the evening and spend the night and the next day with the family, getting to know them. I was just humbled by their hospitality. They seemed to separate the government from the people, and they knew that we were there wanting to seek the truth, and didn't seem to blame us for what our government is doing.
Okay.
But I tell you, everywhere we went, people were talking about Obama, and they had hope that this was going to bring a positive change.
Okay.
They were really excited about Obama.
All right, just one second. Let me just break for station identification. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. With us this evening, we have Nancy Humphrey. She's a member of the Interfaith Peace Builders, who's just recently returned from the area that we call the Gaza Strip, well, around the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and Israel. And she's relating to us her experience and what she's learned from there. If you have any questions or comments, please call 646-652-4620. You can send your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. And please do so. Don't be afraid to call. And get away from those TV sets. The football's no good for your eyes. Okay, now, as we were saying, Nancy, all right, so the people were separate the government. So they're not too happy with the U.S. government, but they actually believe that Barack Obama is going to do something that will help the situation there.
A lot of them did seem to have some hope that there will be a brighter future.
Yeah, because it's strange, because he has pronounced on more than one occasion that we have a special relationship, as they say, with Israel, and we will support Israel to the death almost. And I was really surprised to hear that, because those are almost fighting words to me. If I was a Palestinian, I wouldn't have liked to hear that. You know, I would like to hear something a little bit more conciliatory, but he hasn't been very much so. But I guess that, well, maybe just a change of guard in and of itself may be a reason for hope.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think it's the change of guard that they're hopeful about. And speaking of Obama, I think one of the loudest things was his silence, in that he just didn't make any comment about what was going on in Gaza for these past 20-something days. No comment whatsoever.
And
very disappointing.
Yeah, that would be very disappointing. I mean, and if I was a Palestinian, I would be incredibly disappointed. I would be very worried about that. In that, this person is really not taking a stance or even looking at our our plight and may not even be on our side regardless of the circumstances. Well, that should be alarming. Okay, now when you went there, you were not able to get into Gaza. And it's so strange, you can't get in. I can see where you can't get out, but you can't get in, and the people who are keeping you out are not even the people who are in there, the people outside that are keeping you out, which doesn't really make much sense, but I understand what you're saying, and I believe what you're saying, but it doesn't really make much sense. It's usually the reverse. Tell me, what did you walk away with or what did you feel that you accomplished by going there?
Well, I think I've become passionate about helping people to understand how terrible and wrong the occupation is. It seems like when you learn the facts and can really hear the whole story, it's just so logical to go back to the 1967 borders and let Palestine be independent and let them have the 67 border area, which would include the West Bank and Gaza.
Right. But in that case, Israel would not permit the West Bank and Gaza to be connected in any way. I mean, they would block transportation, would they not?
That's right.
So really, true. You would have, in effect, two states. Now, the Hamas is the government in Gaza, and they were voted in by the people. Hamas was voted
That's
in by
right.
the people, right? The rockets that Hamas fires on Israel, is that being done by a renegade group, or is that actually being done by the government? Is Hamas, the government of the Gaza Strip, actually firing rockets on Israel?
Oh, I don't know if it can be a judge of exactly who it is, renegades or whatever, but they are supposedly Hamas that is firing the rockets. But I think it's important for people to understand that these rockets have been fired for 7 or 8 years, and they have killed, I believe, 3 people have been killed.
I see.
However, the town like of Sderot, those people, you know, they are traumatized from having these rockets firing. They don't know when, and they can be deadly if they hit you directly. So mothers and fathers are, you know, terrified for their children. If people have enough money or a place to go, they've moved. But I talked to people in Sderot that seem to realize that military might is not the answer, and they really looked to their government to solve it diplomatically.
Well, this doesn't make sense to me. If someone came up to me and I know he was a cage wrestler, and this guy's young and strong and, I mean, brutal, you know, I'm not going to punch him in the nose. I'm going to get killed. Now, this is what you have here. I mean, you have David and Goliath. What did they say why Hamas is firing rockets on Israel? I mean, they can't win that war. They can't win a rocket war, that's for sure, because the rockets that the Israelis are firing into the West, into Gaza, are real big, gigantic million-dollar rockets, and the ones that the Hamas are firing are these little metal tubes that people are putting together in their basements. I mean, they couldn't cost less than $50 to make, and most of them go up in the air and they explode, you know, within the Gaza Strip. They don't even get to Israel. I mean, there's no guidance system. They're big firecrackers, basically. But why are they doing that? What do they intend to accomplish by firing these rockets willy-nilly all over the place?
Well, you know, I read all I can about it, and from what I've read, it's my opinion that their intention is not to kill people. Their intention is to, they're resisting the occupation in the only way they can. The occupation has gone on for 7-8 years. Children are growing up, you know, have never been beyond the borders of Gaza because they can't get out. Students get scholarships and they can't leave to go to college. People have medical conditions and need a hospital and they can't get out. Many women have died in childbirth, or the children have died at the border because they can't get across the border to get to the hospital. And with the siege, you know, I understand that they have not had access to clean water. This is before the attack started. This was just living conditions before that. People didn't have enough, you know, clean water, food, medicine. Israel was making it miserable for the whole population.
All right, but what we hear in the United States, and you very well know this, is that Hamas is the bad guy. They're firing rockets on Israel, and Israel is defending itself, and the United States will continue to support Israel against the radical Hamas government. When, from what you are saying, you would think that the U.S. would be bringing Marines and landing them in the Gaza Strip to support the Palestinians against the Israeli. Am I correct, or am I losing my mind? I know I'm losing my mind, Nancy, but I mean, am I losing my mind in this regard?
I don't think so. Joe, do you think maybe that Israel is kind of still the victim because of the Holocaust and people just can't get past that?
I don't know. I mean, listen, it's too long ago. I mean, to me, enough is enough is enough, but I mean, that's me. I for the life of me do not understand why we cannot have more balanced news in this regard, because all we hear about is the, you know, Hamas. I mean, sort of like the war on terror. It sounds like the Gaza Strip are these filled with terrorists, and these are the terrorists, are the same guys who flew airplanes into our World Trade Center, and now they're doing the same thing to the Israeli, and the Israelis are doing everything to protect themselves. That's what we get here. Apparently, this is not what's going on.
Well, I don't understand why, if people believe Israel has a right to defend themselves from these rockets, don't the people of Gaza have a right to defend themselves? And it's like a collective punishment on a 1.5 million people. It doesn't seem right. And in the attack, the people of Gaza had no place to run.
Right.
They are trapped like rats in a cage. It was the most inhumane thing I've ever heard of. Outrageous. And I just can't believe. I know that it looks like they've done some kind of a peace or a ceasefire, but I can't believe that this would end and Israel would come out, you know, lily white, as, you know, just trying to protect their citizens by, I think, 1,100 people were killed in Gaza. You know, the count is still rising. I think there's probably people still buried in the rubble. I don't get it. I mean, it's the numbers are, I would see people, I would say, you know, if you were keeping score, you know, it's 1,100 to 13. 13 Israelis were killed in the process, and I understand four of them were from friendly fire. So, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me that Israel is a victim here.
Yeah, did any of the people that you speak with, the Arabs or the Palestinians or however you want to define them, and I'm sorry because I'm not really sure, did they give a reason or rationale for firing these bottle rockets onto Israeli soil? I mean, I say Israeli soil, I mean prior Palestinian soil. I know the Hamas is against Israel because that used to be their land and it was taken away from them, and they want it back, but they're not going to win that fight, unfortunately. But did they say why they're firing these rockets and what they intend to accomplish by doing this?
Well, it's kind of like, look at me, listen to me, I'm here. I think they feel under the occupation that people are just going to forget about them. behind that wall there, and so they're signaling, don't forget us. We're here and we're suffering. Help us, please.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like they are we got guerrilla warfare in reverse. You know, in guerrilla warfare, the guerrillas are within their own country, and the occupying forces come in. Here you have the guerrilla force within their own country firing outside of their country, and it's a very interesting dilemma. Where do you think the pieces of the puzzle could fall, where some sort of peace can be negotiated? What is disrupting that negotiation process? What are they willing to not give up on both sides?
Well, I'm not sure if Israel really wants to draw a line and have peace. I see the international community, and I see all of the Arab states and even Hamas now saying that they would like to have a two-state solution at the 67 border.
Yeah.
So that's what I think, that if we can get Israel and the United States to open their minds a little bit to that option, it's very frustrating. You know, there was a peaceful time just this past year. Right before I went over there, there was 4 or 5 months of peace between Hamas and Israel in this little town of Sderot. They had signed some kind of a peace treaty, and the Hamas, you know, the evil Hamas had actually stopped firing rockets and were trying to stop whoever, you know, everyone from firing the rockets. But Israel kind of didn't go along with their side of the bargain, because they said, you know, if you'll stop the rockets, we will help your civilians and let up on the siege and let trucks in and humanitarian aid and lighten up on the borders. And that just was not happening.
Well, if Israel is in encasing, you know, all of Gaza, the area called Gaza, right now, how are they getting food and medicine and water? And how are they getting stuff? How are they getting stuff? I mean, if it's is it totally blockaded, or is there stuff coming in and out? Is the United States providing any support to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, aid or anything like that? I mean, if peaceful delegations can't get in, who can get in?
That's a good question. I think a limited amount of food and medicine and supplies has been let in, but it's been very limited. You know, I believe some help comes from the United Nations. Some of the aid comes through Egypt, possibly, but I can't give you some direct information on that question, Joe.
Yeah, well, you would think that the United Nations would have stepped in on this dispute a long time ago.
Well, the United Nations has, from what I understand, every year they try to pass a resolution to bring peace and restore the borders, and to call the settlements illegal, that they need to be dismantled and moved. And it's like the United Nations, all the countries in the United Nations vote yes, and Israel and the United States and a couple of islands, and I think Australia vote no, but it's like 167-5 is the vote. So the United Nations has done all they can to try to restore peace in the area. They just need to get Israel and America on board.
Yeah. Well, we're certainly not getting the flavor that you give of the area is certainly not the flavor that we are getting on our mainstream media. Is that true? I mean, I don't watch the news all the time, but okay. What do you find that our mainstream media to be most objectionable regarding this conflict?
Well, I wish people could be more open-minded. I know what comes to my mind is my hero. I guess my first hero in high school was Atticus Finch. Do you know the story of To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yes.
Atticus was an attorney, and he's trying to explain to his daughter that you've got to crawl into someone else's skin and walk around to try to understand them.
Right.
And I know Native Americans say walk a mile in another man's moccasins.
Right.
Well, I think people on both sides, both the Israelis and the Palestinians, need to try to walk in each other's shoes in their minds and really identify with what it's like to live under those conditions. Because certainly we can sympathize with the Israeli people that live in Stavanger who are having those rockets fired on them.
Yes. Well,
who could not sympathize with the people of Gaza that have been caged in like this for years, unable to come and go? You know, there's 1.5 million people there, and I understand like 1.2 million of them are refugees. I mean, they used to live someplace else, and they've been pushed into the Gaza Strip. So it's a pretty pitiful situation.
All right. Just let me stop for station identification one more time before we, because we have about 10-15 minutes. This is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. In our studio this evening, we are privileged to have Miss Nancy Humphrey. She's a member of the Interface Peace Builders who recently returned from visiting the area known as the Gaza Strip. And this is what we're talking about. Please call in if you wish, 646-652-4620. We'd love to hear from you. You can send your comments or questions anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Now, Nancy, where do you go from here? Now that you've been there, what are your plans?
Well, I'm trying to speak to as many groups as I possibly can. Various community civic organizations, church groups. As a matter of fact, we have a really great event I can put a plug in for in Tulsa.
Oh, please do.
On Monday the 26th. Can we do a little plug for that?
Absolutely. This is your time. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, Tulsa Truth is going to have a meeting at 6:30 at Hardesty Library in Tulsa on Monday the 26th. And the title of our program is The Truth About Gaza. The truth about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and it's going to start with the documentary, and then I'm going to give some information about recent firsthand experience, and we'll have a second speaker who is a Tulsan, who's a father, an American citizen, but he's also a Palestinian Muslim who was, I believe, born in Palestine and grew up in a refugee camp in Lebanon. But he now is a successful business owner in Tulsa, and he's going to tell us his experiences from his family's point of view.
Okay, so that'll be
very informative.
That'll be at the Hardesty Library. That's about 93rd Street and South Memorial. And it'll be Monday evening, tomorrow evening. And was that 6:30 you said?
Actually, I hope it's not tomorrow.
It's 26th. That's a week from this month. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm ahead of myself. I apologize, folks. It'll be January 26th, Monday, January 26th at 6:30. Please show up. It's free, and it'll be very, very interesting. Now, Nancy, when have you had an opportunity to speak to any groups yet?
Well, yes. My first group was the Henrietta Lions Club.
Ah, very interesting. Now, could you tell me, what was their reaction to you?
Well, of course I ran out of time for a little lunch meeting.
Right.
Several stayed after to ask questions, and many had to leave before we had time for questions.
Okay.
So, but they seemed curious and at least open to hear my information. I kind of like to start my talks with a little bit of history and geography.
Right.
And I've got some maps that kind of just help you visualize what's happened. So it kind of helps to get you started.
All right. You did not experience any hostility or anything like that towards you because for taking any, you know, for sympathizing with the Palestinian plight?
No, I experienced no hostilities, and people were kind of worried about me because I'm 4'10" and blonde, and they thought I might kind of stick out in the midst of the.
Okay.
I had no problems, and people were just very kind.
Okay. Now, I suspect one obstacle that you will have and continue to have is the fact that still our vision of the Arab world is that they are all terrorists wanting to kill us. We're such good people. Why would they want to do that? Because we've never done anything bad to them. They're all bad.
Yeah.
Right, and we're all good. I would imagine this has got to be an obstacle. How do you overcome that when you're fighting mostly perception, all of it, which is skewed in the wrong direction?
Well, first of all, I hope my personal stories of people, families that I met, and their hospitality and kindness to me would help people to open up their minds. And then I know, like in Tulsa, we've got a Muslim society group that has events to help people just meet the Muslim people and to understand about their faith. We have an interfaith community group in Tulsa as well. So I know those groups are kind of trying to reach out and bring
right.
understanding.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully that's going on in other cities.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine that you would have a perception problem to overcome, because in the United States, for some reason, when you say Arab, it would be like saying terrorist. And this is what we do, because I've heard that before. In fact, I have friends who associate associate terrorism with Arabs and Arabs with terrorism, and there's nobody else. I mean, they're all terrorists. That's all they do, and they go around blowing themselves up and blowing other people up for no reason, by the way. We have about we have about 6 or 7 more minutes. So I want to leave this 6 or 7 minutes to you to talk about anything that you think is critically important regarding your trip.
Okay. Well, first of all, I would like to give the site for people to go to if they would like to read more about my group, Interfaith Peace Builders. That would be ISPBDEL.org. And you can learn about that organization. The parent organization is Fellowship of Reconciliation, and that's FORUSA.org. And you can learn about those, and maybe someone listening would like to have an opportunity to go on a delegation in the future, because it is truly life-changing to see that part of the country and meet those people. And like I said, I've come back passionate about it.
Let me stop you there. I didn't intend to interrupt you, but I have to, because I'll forget. How does a person who wants to go there, who wants to be a delegate for peace, how do they do that? What's the process that they go through?
Start by going to that site, and they can find out when the delegations are in 2009, and there's an application form to fill out, and they should be on their way.
Okay, now, the people have to pay for their own plane fare, transportation,
yes.
and lodging and whatever, right? This is not a public or privately supported thing where someone gives donations. Okay.
You have to raise your own money, and many people have fundraisers and figure out ways to help to raise the money to send them on the delegation.
All right. So you go there, and then and the objective is to come back and to be an advocate for some sort of peaceful resolution to the situation.
Right.
Okay,
absolutely.
Very good. Okay, I interrupted you. I apologize. Continue. I was just curious about that.
Well, I wanted to tell you about a man that we met when we were in Sirdot, which is that little city just outside of Gaza.
Yeah.
His name was Eric Yellen, and he is a father and husband, and has been there for 8 years in the midst of all these rockets. But he is one of many that believe that a peaceful solution, that negotiation, is the answer.
Right.
And he has started a group called Other Voice, And this is people in Sirdoot that are communicating with people in Gaza. And he has made a friend that is as yet anonymous, and the friend's name is Hope Man, and Eric's name is Peace Man, and they've started a blog. And the blog is called Life Must Go On in Gaza and Sirdoot.
Okay.
And these two men, you know, communicate what's going on. They both believe that the media on their each side is giving a biased report, and so their goal is to try to, you know, tell the truth about what is happening on both sides.
Okay.
And I was just very impressed with Eric. I've since read on the internet that he started a petition that nearly 2,000 people from that little village signed, calling for the IDF to stop their operations in the Strip and to renew a truce with Hamas. So there's one peacemaker that is trying to make a positive difference over there.
All right, but even if they make a truce, we still have the problem of the blockades. And, you know, how do people live, by the way, in Gaza? I mean, what kind of businesses or industry, if any, is there? I mean, what do they do?
I know employment is way down. People, you know, how can you have a job? 67 schools have been destroyed, so they don't have schools now. It's a mess.
My goodness gracious.
It was a mess before, and it's a bigger mess now. They just destroyed all the infrastructure. I'm sure Hamas is still there, and I don't know if they're going to stop the rockets or not.
Okay, well, I'm not too optimistic about this at all, unfortunately. But could Nancy, in the minute that we have left, if you'd like, you can tell our listeners how they can get in contact with you if they have any questions, if they'd like to invite you to speak somewhere.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, probably the best way to reach me is on my email, and that's NANCYS. Humphrey, Humphrey, at sbcglobal.net.
Okay, so it's Nancy S. Humphrey, Nancy S. Humphrey, at sbcglobal.net. Okay, very good. Well, Nancy, I'd like to thank you so much for being our guest on our show this evening. I'm a little disappointed that we did not have any calls, but it doesn't surprise me. It's NFL football championship game
right.
Going on right now. And whenever that happens, because Sunday evening sometimes is not the best time to broadcast
sure.
because of football games, but that's the way it goes. That's the time that we have available. That's the time we take it. I'd like to thank you very much.
Well, I would love another opportunity to come back and talk some more if you'll have me, Joe.
Absolutely. Nancy, you just let me know and we'll do that. I also would like to say that I appreciate what you have been doing, and for people who really truly are in need, I think what you're doing is absolutely wonderful, and you're a better person for it. I tell you, that's wonderful. I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Joe. This time has gone by so quickly. Well,
it has.
I can't believe an hour is over.
Yes, it has, right. Okay.
I have so much more to say.
Okay, we'll catch you next time, Nancy, then, okay?
Thanks, Joe.
All right. Good
Thanks
night.
Thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, jeez, kind of discouraging in a way, isn't it? Wow, let's see. Wow, I think if I went there, I'd be totally distraught. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, and remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberty, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. Your ride is controlled, and that isn't any more fun. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well, stay tuned.